Chicago, 2011. A cop is murdered. Police and prosecutors swear they have the trigger man. He swears he didn't do it. How far will each side go to prove they're right?
Like it's just one bombshell after another, you know, where you're like, what?
The story of a PlayStation, a brain-eating amoeba, and the relentless pursuit of justice. Off Duty, out now. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is The Rundown. It might be hard to believe, but migrants from Venezuela have been arriving in Chicago en masse for 2 years now. The first busload of folks came in the summer of 2022. I know, time flies, right? And now there's a total of about 30,000 Venezuelan migrants here. Now, that influx has caused some backlash in the city. Some people think migrants are adding to our crime numbers and taking up resources that longtime Chicago residents need. Well, my colleague, WBEZ reporter Chip Mitchell, spent 2 weeks in the country of Colombia, which has had a much larger influx of migrants from Venezuela. Now, these two countries share the same language, the same religion, and a whole 1,400-mile border. But when Chip was there earlier this year, he found that even though they have all that in common, there's been backlash in Colombia as well. WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times have been looking into the issues that affect voters ahead of the presidential election this year. So today we're going to share some of Chip's reporting from Colombia about the xenophobia that Venezuelan migrants have been facing. He starts with the story of a Venezuelan named Desiree, who arrived in Colombia when she was a little girl.
The xenophobia is noticeable at young ages. Desiree Borges was 9 when her family arrived from central Venezuela. Her parents couldn't find employment, so they became informal recyclers. They pull a big cart through neighborhoods and pick through garbage to find bottles, cans, and egg cartons. Desiree saw the work as honorable, but her classmates saw a lot of Venezuelans doing it and shamed her for it.
Que no digan que porque reciclamos.
She says they accused her family of eating and stealing from garbage. Desiree faced a different form of xenophobia when she was 15. She was pregnant, but her mom didn't know. What she knew was that her daughter had a boyfriend and was having sex. Desiree's mom took her to a clinic for a contraceptive implant, a small rod in the upper arm. Desiree says her classmates and even teachers started bullying her about the implant, saying it was for going to bed with lots of men and that this was typical of Venezuelan girls. Now, in reality, it's not just Venezuelan teens who have sex in Colombia. In fact, both countries have some of the hemisphere's highest teen birth rates. Researchers say it has to do with poverty and machismo. But Desiree still faced the harassment at school. Crying in a school bathroom one day, she decided to drop out. Xenophobia pushed this Venezuelan teen further to the margins of Colombian society. The xenophobia might be surprising because many Colombians have close ties to Venezuela. They might have relatives who moved there during one of its oil booms or who were displaced by Colombia's long civil war. Those migrants in Venezuela were often branded drug dealers and thieves and prostitutes. Now the tables are turned. Venezuelans have poured into Colombia. During my weeks there, I kept hearing similar horrible accusations about Venezuelan migrants. I heard them not only from Colombians competing with the migrants on the lower rungs of the labor market, and not just from far-right nationalists. I heard the accusations about Venezuelans from well-educated professionals and people who consider themselves progressive, like this nursing supervisor.
Bueno, mi nombre es Pilar Páez, soy enfermera jefe.
Pilar Páez helps run a reproductive health unit of a public hospital in Bogotá, the capital. She tells me young women from Venezuela disregard her advice to use contraceptives.
Llegan con una perspectiva de embarazarse.
She says they want to get pregnant because they want more government aid by having a kid with Colombian nationality. What Pius says reminds me of an old canard about U.S. immigrants having so-called anchor babies. And Pius doesn't stop there.
Y digamos que bueno, o sea, nuestra cultura pues es muy distinta a la de Venezuela. Yo lo que veo es que en Venezuela sí la promiscuidad es impresionante.
Compared to Colombia, she says, the promiscuity in Venezuela is striking.
There is this way to stigmatize Venezuelan women.
Martina Rapido of Human Rights Watch says the bigotry crops up in every South American country where Venezuelans have migrated.
They are prostitutes, they are stealing husbands, they are more keen to have sex for specific benefits or something in exchange. There's this strong gender component in discrimination towards Venezuelans.
The common suspicion about Venezuelan men is that they're thieves. You hear this stuff as far away as Chicago. It can get in the way of finding apartments and jobs. And xenophobia sometimes seeps into resentment among longtime Chicagoans who feel they deserve the resources that are going to migrants. Colombia actually has a new office tasked with combating xenophobia. President Gustavo Petro set it up after his 2022 election. Liliana Morales Hurtado heads the office.
La exclusión y la xenofobia nunca van a generar nada más que círculos de violencia.
Morales says xenophobia fuels cycles of poverty and violence, cycles that hurt everyone, not just migrants. She says her office is planning campaigns against xenophobia, but they'll need international funding because the government isn't providing much. Morales says her office has only 10 employees. That's for a country of 52 million. President Petro himself almost never speaks up for migrants. That leaves the fight against xenophobia largely to non-governmental groups. Laura Jimenez heads one in Bogota called The Barometer. It uses web-crawling software to spot xenophobia in news reports and social media postings. Some of the findings show reasons for optimism.
When there's something very xenophobic, there's a lot of people that respond against the message.
In other words, the xenophobia is widespread, and so is the pushback against it. But sparring online accomplishes only so much. Jimenez says effective efforts in the physical world have ranged from pro-migrant street theater to training for journalists and protests denouncing politicians who bash migrants. And Jimenez has a message for Chicagoans. She says they could take on xenophobia by drawing from the fact that so many of the city's residents are descendants of immigrants who once faced xenophobia themselves.
Migrants need to know they have people backing them, you know? That there are people who are denouncing discrimination, that Venezuelans see that they have support.
Desiree Borges, the Venezuelan teen tormented at school, she did not see much support before deciding to drop out. She's now 17. She had her baby last year. Every morning, Desiree puts her daughter in a stroller so she can help her parents on the recycling rounds. She says she wants to return to school to get ahead for her baby and her parents. Then she considers the barriers to going back, and her voice trails off. Tears fill her eyes. For Desiree and many other Venezuelans, one of the biggest barriers to a better life is xenophobia. Chip Mitchell, WBEZ News.
You can find more of Chip's reporting on Venezuelan migration to Colombia, as well as photography by Anthony Vasquez at WBEZ.org. This series is a part of the Democracy Solutions Project from WBEZ, the Chicago Sun-Times, and the University of Chicago's Center for Effective Government, with funding from the Pulitzer Center. And that's it for today. Justin Bull, Sarah Stark, and I produce The Rundown. Ariel Van Cleve is our editor and executive producer. Our theme music is by Louis Weeks. The Rundown is produced by WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening to the show. Talk to you on Wednesday.